Welcome in, everyone. Welcome to the table. I'm Robbie.
I'm Jason.
And welcome to the table. We are so excited to have you guys here. Episode number 10. Jason, we've gotten here.
We've made it. It's crazy to think it's 10. Like it feels like we've been doing this for a long time, but then not a lot. And then I was like, wow, I was going back and creating the list of all the games we talked about to think about for this. Like, oh, wow, that was a long time ago now, June or something like that, or September, whatever it is. Time just flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think what's nice about this, and I'm curious because at this point we've had quite a few people like tune in and listen as well. And I want to talk about that here in a second, but this podcast, like the numbers don't feel represented, and it's because we're doing it every other week. Now for Jason and I's sanity, I don't see us ramping that up unless we somehow popped off and we were hiring someone to like produce the show. Then we may end up like producing one more, but also being on another podcast where we produce every single week, it gets tough. And right now, if you are one of our video watchers, you'll notice that Jason is not in his traditional background. Where are you at this week, Jason?
I'm actually in Orlando at Disney World. Not quite Disney World right now, but we're at Disney World this week and having an awesome time. So hopefully the internet connection is good here. I've told everybody in my family to jump off their devices for the next hour so that I can hopefully not bog it down. So, but yeah, we're halfway through our Disney World trip. We've got two more days, Magic Kingdom, and then a fifth day to figure out whatever we're going to do. So we're excited and having fun. Even brought some board games. None of the games I'll talk about today have I played lately, but I brought a couple light games just to do it. Cause I'll say this, and I haven't even told you this yet, Robbie. I have a goal to play every game I own in 2024. And if I don't play it, get rid of it, or have a really, really long heart to heart discussion with myself on why I'm keeping a game I didn't play a single time. So like that's so like some of the games we play this week are like, let's just play it to get it done. I'll probably play it again, but we'll see by the end of the year to see if I actually got through every game I own at least once. We'll see.
That makes me very excited for our trips up there or like for my trips up there, because it also means that like I know we have played, because something that like you'll see, and I'll be curious because I don't know that any of these made my list that we're talking about today and we're teasing here, but there are like great game collections. Y'all have like filler games, games that are, oh, we're having a game night and I'm just going to throw the name out there because it's been used, but like Brad's running late because of the kids. All right, cool. Well, we're all ready to play. We've already eaten dinner. We're chilling. Why don't we just grab Cartographers and we'll play a quick game of Cartographers. Like there are games that are intense, and then there are games like Super Mario Bros. Card game, great example of we use that at our house. So and I love those light travel games. I took the Crew has been my like light game that I keep taking with me everywhere at this point, and I'm just itching every at this point. Jason, if you and I had to start over on the Crew, I could tell you like the first 10 missions without even looking at the book. That's because awesome. I feel like I get people going and I'm like, this is how it goes. Quite a fun time. But we have played other games as of late. And so, Jason, what are some games you've played lately?
I was going back and forth when Robbie and I were talking off air. There's one game I was going to talk about that's just too hard to explain, but I had a good time called Raw. It's an auction game. That'll be a discussion for another time. But I played two games, and these are both worker placement games. One is the latest game from Stonemaier Games called Apiary. It's basically about bees in space. Bees have become sentient, and they're now the dominant force. But the thing I will highlight on here, and Robbie hasn't played this one yet, but I showed it to our in-laws when they were here over the holidays. It's basically you have worker bees that you place. Your workers are bees, and they're basically a square that's numbered 1, 2, 3, or 4, and it shows what strength level those workers are. So if you put a level 2 bee in this particular worker space, it gives you a power of 2 for whatever that action is, whether it's buying a tile or getting resources or getting some seed cards, which give you bonus abilities. What's very cool about this game, it's not uncommon in Stonemaier games, is that no place is ever locked and that you can always be bumped. So if I go to this one worker placement spot with my 2B and take my action, then Elizabeth goes and she bumps me. Well, I get that B back and it goes up to 3. So it's leveling up as well, which is just super cool. And Jamie has done this with some of his other games in the Stonemaier line. But what's interesting is that at some point, if you're a worker 4B, which is the strongest one, and whenever you place a worker 4B, it gives us all these other big bonuses on top of the basic action. When that B gets bumped, it goes into hibernation. And so now it goes off the board and you get a little hibernation bonus for that little piece that you put down at the bottom board. So a way to get bonuses. But now you have to take an action later on to bring that B out of hibernation. A low cost action, really easy to do, but it's just so cool because you're kind of managing your Bs. And as is common for Stonemaier games, it ramps up really quick. If you remember Viticulture, I think we told you, like, okay, it's going to be like Viticulture. I think the score, once you hit 25 is the last round, we're like, oh, it's going to go 15, 15, 25, right? Like out of nowhere. And that's kind of the way Apiary is. And I just love it. I won't go into much more detail, but it's definitely one we will show you. It's getting a lot of good love from end of year reviews, like top 10s of 2023 from a lot of reviewers. Super cool. Sentient bees in space with that worker bee option is pretty cool. The second one I'm going to talk about is actually Dune Imperium, which is a worker placement deck building game. So in a deck building game, traditional deck building games, you start off with 10 cards, you draw the 5 cards, and on your turn, you're going to use those cards to take those actions, whatever that action may be. Clank is very similar to that. We played Clank where you play it and you're moving someone down. But in Dune Imperium, the cards have dual use. And so at the top, it has some symbols, which basically is where you can place your worker. If you have this, if you play this card with this symbol, you can place your worker where that symbol's at and take whatever action that is, getting spice, getting Solari, maybe getting water, all terms for folks who maybe know the Dune universe. Or if you choose, and you only start with 2 workers, so you end up using 2 cards out of your 5 card hand to do that, then there's items at the bottom, whether it's numbers to buy more cards or combat strength, because there's a combat at the end of every round, or you save those cards at the end of your turn, you reveal, and now you have these bonuses at the end of your turn. So you're going to play cards during your turn to push workers out. Everybody does it. And then when you're done with your workers, you'll turn that over to show, okay, I have 5 buying power and I buy a new card and that goes into my discard pile. So later on it gets shuffles into my deck. Super cool. Like I think it's top 10 on BGG, or if not there, it's moving very fast. It's beloved by most people. What's cool about it, and board game snobs like myself, sometimes when we have games that have screen caps from movies, we don't necessarily like that. I mean, for whatever reason, it's a snobbery, totally admit it, you know, confessing my sins here. But in Dune Imperium, they take almost like artistic renderings of the movie that's out, Dune, that came out last year, and what the sequel would be of those characters. So it is Jason Isaac. It is Oscar Isaac. Excuse me. Is Timothy Chalamet on those cards? And so you can play as those characters, but also when the cards get revealed, the same character as well from the movie, but it's a very cool, like, artistic rendition of that. So if you like the movie, this game is great for you, for sure. If you like worker placement and deck building, it's great. Both of these are more mid-weight games, for sure. They're not entry level. A newer player could definitely handle these, playing the actions of these games, but the deeper strategy comes with a lot of play on it. Love both of these games. Dune Imperium would definitely be a top 10 of my all the time, and Apiary is moving up there for sure. So super fun games. Like both games will eventually show you, because you definitely need to play them.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for it. We played Clank, I want to say it was just the last time I was up there. It wasn't the time before last. But we played Clank, and Jason and I, spoiler, are in the process of trying to design a disc golf board game for those crossing over from other realms. And so we're trying to look at how we want to do that. So we played Clank for inspiration. And from my understanding, Clank was the easier version of Dune Imperium.
Yep, that's exactly it.
So
same designer of both games.
Okay, fantastic. So excited to try that out. I played, I had a lot of games planned for the holidays, and only one out, and was played everywhere that I went for the holidays. And it was Quaxor Quedlinburg.
Fantastic.
I just continue to fall in love with this game. And it is like the two ways that I fall in love with it, or I see people's eyes light up and I'm like, all right, you're loving this, all that. Just a heads up, if you go buy this, Just know that you're not going to have the satisfying piece. And they're like, all right. And I'm like, at this point, I would still recommend buying the expansions and things like that by the big box, because you get the second expansion for free. But just know that, like, for an investment, you can really be set up for success. And something that we tried this time, Jason, is I took every color out there besides orange and black, because those are two like kind of fixed powers. Black does have some options, but I took those two and pulled them out. And then I put every other color in like my hand and had everybody playing after we'd all played it once, because with one crew, we ended up playing twice. And I had every other color, and you picked your color, and then I handed them all of the options.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're
for saying. That color, yeah. And then they got to chose. Pick whatever power they wanted. Very for
cool.
That.
Very cool.
Made it super interesting. So when we did that, we ended up, there are a lot of them that have like an insurance type vibe of like, if you bust, you get this.
Yeah.
And that was definitely the story of when I played the first time. I ended up at like 89 points or something like that. I had an insane game. And for clarification, we didn't even have the blue like preview right. power in there, Jason. I was getting wow. the pulls of a lifetime here. And so I'm going nuts, all that. And then next closest was like pretty far behind.
Yeah.
Because they just kept busting. Now, when we played the second time, everyone had the insurance policies. And I was like, I don't really bust that often. I'm a pretty safe player. Here we go. Through the first four rounds, Jason, I pulled six chips that were not white. Six. And four of them came in one round. Oh, they came gosh. In the fourth round. Yep. It was like, what are we doing, people? And I even had, like, there was one witch power where I got to reset. If after five, you reset. Yep. So I pulled five whites, and I was nah, I can go farther. So I pulled them all, threw them back in, and got five whites again. It was like, great. So Quax Quedlinburg really enjoyed it. My mother-in-law loved it, which was fun because she is very averse to learning new games.
Yeah, good.
So she played it, loved it. Josh from Overthrow probably will never play Quax again because there's nine rounds. We played two games, 18 rounds possible. I think Josh probably exploded on 12. So what a time. He would keep looking and he'd be like, all right, I have seven chips left in my bag. I just can't pull the three. Bang. Pulled the three every time. Yeah. So what a fun. For those of you who haven't listened to that episode, we have an episode on Quax, which is why I wanted to go a little more there, because you can all relate at this point. And then the other game we played is one that I played it, and I'm pretty confident it instantly jumped into my top 10 because this game has so many cool features to it. And it's called Veiled Fate. If you get board games advertised to you on social media, Ivy Games is the publisher. And I am willing to bet that they have spent so much money on pushing it, because I don't know why I've never had a game advertised to me as much as Veiled Fate was advertised to me. And I'm kicking myself for not kickstarting it because I'm sure there were some cool Kickstarter editions and everything. It's probably a game that I will eventually hunt down the Kickstarter, right. But I got to play with a few more groups first to officially like declare. So Veiled Fate concept for everyone listening is you are essentially, I think like your premise is that you are gods watching the board, and there you can play anywhere from 2 to 8 players, which is that's first off, not something that's very common in games to be able to ramp up to 8 players and it still be competitive and not just like overwhelming. So that's really cool. Then there are 9 demigods on the board. And so you get randomly dealt one of those demigods as you. And on your turn, you can take 2 actions. But those 2 actions, you can move any of the demigods. So those demigods are gathering points over time. So you want to move and position your demigod in a way that it's getting points, but you don't want to be so obvious that everyone's like, ah, Jason's red.
Yep.
Sick. And then they just destroy you. So we played this one twice. I came in last place both times. And I still loved it. It is social deduction. It has worker placement. It has management of actions. It's got so many things to it. And here's one of the things, because I know Jason is not a big gotcha guy in terms of if a game has a gotcha mechanic. And so when I think about games that really we could love together, I think about my wife loves gotcha elements. So how do you have a gotcha element that isn't punishing?
Right.
And what's really cool about Veiled Fate is that none of the gotcha actions are personal, because you have no idea who is who.
Right.
Like, we had a game where one demigod got super far ahead and we were like, that's Josh. Josh is blue. Let's crush Josh. So all three of the other players, we just crushed blue at the end, and Josh was like yellow. And so he just won because none of us thought, oh yeah, that's him. So even if you do try to go personal with it, it doesn't matter. And both times, no one had any clue who I was because I didn't do a good enough job. And so it's just super fascinating. I'm definitely bringing it next time I come up.
Oh, I remember. I think we texted about this. I'm glad to hear it went over so well, for sure. Because I when you texted me about the game, I know the name, but I couldn't remember it. And I went and watched Tom from Dice Tower talk about it. And in general, based on the games I've played, if he likes it in general, I know I will probably not dislike it. And then when he explained, I'm like, okay, that could be pretty cool with the right people, for sure. You got to have the right people who are enjoying it. And then when I heard it went so well, I was very excited, because it was one of those that you said you lost both times but love it. That's when you know a game is really great. And so I had to go text you this stuff. I Smartphone Inc., one of my all-time favorite games. I've never won. Not in my BG stats error. I literally have never won that. And a couple of Wingspan, I've won 2 times out of 11, right? And I love Wingspan. So I just, games that I, Downforce, Downforce is one of our games. It's a double doozy for me. And I've never won that game. Not in 3 years. I've been doing BG stats since 2001, 2021. And I've never won those games, but I still pull them out in a heartbeat. So it's so exciting, definitely, to hear that it went over so well. And I don't know if you saw this when Josh and Dakota were driving home from y'all's weekend trip. They were doing an Ask Me Anything. So I was like, okay, opinion. I typed in their opinion on Veiled Fate. And Josh was like, it's my favorite board game ever. He goes, now, in full all defense, I don't have a big experience, right? But at least right now, it's his favorite game. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, Josh won it twice.
Right, so it makes it easy to like a game.
He won it twice, but one of the mechanics, and I don't want to die, I'll jump off here, but one of the mechanics is really cool is there's a scoring ring that goes around the board. And so each scoring point is a zone kind of a deal. So it's the 6 zone, the 7 zone, things like that. Okay. So when someone enters a new scoring zone, they instantly jump to the top of that zone. So, and that is how tiebreakers that is the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So we came down to the last game, Dylan and Josh both jumped in, but literally Dylan jumped in first.
Okay.
And so they had the same amount of points, but because Dylan just got his action done first, he lost. And he was so salty about it.
Oh, for sure. Oh, my gosh.
It was incredible. Yeah. He was like, that's a dumb tiebreaker. And we're like, sorry, brother. That's how it works. So speaking of how things work, I want to go ahead and take a quick moment because episode 10, mile marker, we're going to be doing a bit of a different episode. But I want to, and I didn't prep Jason with this, but I want to do a giveaway for our listeners. We're in episode 10, and here's how we're going to trigger the giveaway. Is I'm going through, and one of the biggest ways you guys can support the show and what we're doing is to leave reviews. So we actually have 11 reviews on Apple Podcasts, and we have 9 reviews on Spotify. Now, you guys are the best. They're all 5-star reviews. So if you really want to critique us and give us not 5 stars, that's fine. We get it. We understand. Not every episode's a double doozy for us. So let's just go ahead and call it what it is. So here's how I'm going to trigger the giveaway is I am going to do, we're going to do a giveaway when we reach 50 subscribers or 50 ratings on Apple is going to trigger one giveaway, and 50 ratings on Spotify is going to trigger another giveaway. So we'll flip a coin off air, but what we're going to be doing for episode 10 is we're going to be giving a list. So Jason, if it makes sense to you, this list is all about how to start your collection. So what I'm planning on doing is whatever our number one is, whatever your number one is, whatever my number one is, that's what we're going to give away when we break those milestones.
Like it. Love it.
And I, once again, I'm not, I didn't put Jason on the gamble for this. No. I will be supplying both of the board games here because I didn't approve this, but I'm just throwing that out there. So you can leave reviews. So far, some really cool reviews. I've got Scotty Cash, play disc golf, watch, listen to a ton of related content. We really appreciate that. Another one that I really appreciated was Jab 1994. After listening to the first episode, had some thoughts, but I want to listen to a few of these. There are a ton of board game podcasts available too. Many are great. I listen to quite a few. However, Robbie C and Jason have a different approach. Great conversational. Really think this is the best podcast for beginner board gamers. So Jab 1994, you're the man. We really appreciate your, or you're the woman. I don't know. But Jab, we appreciate it. So thank you guys. Spotify, you can't really leave a note with it, but we appreciate those reviews as well. So it's way easier to do it on Spotify. But 50 on each of those platforms, and we got giveaways coming to you.
I love it. I'm excited.
So Jason, I teased it. You want to give a breakdown of a more in-depth breakdown of what we're doing this week?
For sure. For sure. So this week, our it's going to be in the title because we definitely need this in the title to help with the algorithms, is we're coming up with, we're going to give you our top 10 list to start a collection. And each of us probably went at it a little bit different. Well, each of us will explain kind of how we target it because we were chatting offline. The one caveat is, there's three games. You hear us always talk about the three OG games. If you're a gamer, you know what these are. If you've listened to us, you've heard us say it. Ticket to Ride, or the start of the really OG, the Settlers of Catan, Ticket to Ride, and Carcassonne. So by default, those are the, we always compare those to the three OG, and then we always talk about second tier and third tier. So we thought, you know what? They're OG for a reason, and they're great games. If you picked any one of these games to be your first game ever, it's a great game. Yeah. So those three will be in each of our lists. And so somewhere when we go through our top 10, you're going to hear Ticket to Ride, you're going to hear Settlers of Catan, and you're going to hear Carcassonne. Now, another caveat, or a little heads up, Robbie and I have not shared each other's list. So other than knowing those three games, we do not know what's on each other's list. So it's going to be exciting because I get to hear it real time where his is. He's going to hear it real time where mine is. And so that's, there's a lot of the folks out there who have that. These top 10 lists, I didn't watch anybody else's, to be honest, because I wanted not to be affected by others. I really looked hard, and it was hard. I had a long list of like 30 or 40 games to go through there. So I will quickly tell you, my focus of my list was to try to have each game have a slightly different mechanism in it, right? You hear us talk about deck building, card drafting, whatever it is. Now, I'll kind of quickly highlight that per game. Not that you can't have three deck building games. That's fine as well. But at least for the list for the list I created, I want it to be a variety of each of the, each of them have at least a different mechanism so that a newer gamer can get practice with those different mechanisms. Robbie, what was kind of your thoughts on your top 10?
Yeah, so very, very similar vibes in terms of the big three had to be included. I think about, as an anime watcher, I think about the big three in Bleach, One Piece, and Naruto. And like, you have animated television, and then you have like anime, right? And so the big three are iconic. And I think that as time goes on, I could see some of these falling off in terms of being the big three, but I think that we are at least 10 years away from that until people aren't looking at. And even then, I feel like there will be people that hold on to, like Catan may, quote, fall off, but like board gaming would not be, I'll go ahead and be so bold as to say board gaming would not be what it is, like the modern hobby gaming, without Settlers of Catan.
Totally agree.
So I agree. I tried to find like sort of different genres to represent them. Now, that also brings in a caveat that we talked about of if we were just to put out like our 10 list, it would be really easy to go through the past 9 episodes and be like, Yeah, I think Downforce is one you definitely should have. I think Quacks is one you should definitely have. I think Cascadia is one you should definitely have. We obviously are going, we're choosing the main game episode or the main game of the episodes because we believe they would be good beginner games and good to add to a collection. And I know, like, I'm a shout out our guy, Nate, who is building his board game collection. And I feel like most weeks he's buying what we're pushing if it sounds interesting. So that's, we really appreciate that. But we put the second caveat. First was that the big three had to be included in your list. And the second was if you wanted to include a game that we've done, you can only include one that's been a main game or a main episode game.
Yep.
Am I saying that right?
The game we cover, yeah. our highlight game, our primary game, our game of discussion, right?
Yeah. So that's kind of how we spread it out. Now I'm going to be very curious. And now I know for me, it was tempting. There was two games that were like honorary mentions for me that I don't own. And I was like, I have a hard time morally putting it on my list if I don't actually own the game.
Yeah.
I will go ahead and say one of those was Kingdom Builders. I thought about that game and I played that not on my last trip, but the trip before last. I thought about that game so much because Jason obliterated me and Elizabeth. And I was like, I could do better. Like, I know I could do better if I had to play this game again. So my request is when you're playing through it in 2024, save a Kingdom Builder repeat for me.
For sure.
So that was one. And then, gosh, what was my other honorable mention of one that I didn't own? It was Cartographers.
Yep.
But I'll kind of highlight into that a little bit. Cartographers is a roll and write. I guess, is it technically a roll and write?
It's a flip and write. It's in the verb and write genre. We generically say roll and write, but it's a flip and write. You say, what's another roll and write game? But it's actually a flip and write game. But it is. You flip a card and then you draw that polyomino shape onto your piece of paper.
Yeah. So, and Cartographers, I will admit that I did check some lists just to make sure that I wasn't like spacing on. I didn't include that game, kind of a deal. So I'm very excited for this. Jason, I've talked a lot here in this section. Why don't you go ahead and get started on number 10?
Okay, absolutely. And I'm going to go and highlight, you mentioned a couple honorable mentions. I actually have a couple honorable mentions in a different way. So I do own, I have a very big collection, and thankfully I own all the games that are on my list, but just because I have too many as it is. I have a couple of honorable mentions. One, because they're honorable mentions because they're very specific to a type of thematic, a game, right? One was Cartographers. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned it. Flip and write genre, the roll and write genre is so big and so great, and there's so many awesome ones. My favorite one's Metro X, but it's maybe not the best one to start off with, so I didn't put one on there. Downforce, because it's a racing game. I don't have a racing game on my list, a little spoiler. If you have the right group who doesn't mind a little hidden roll and a little take that, Bang the Dice game is fantastic. Mm. I don't have any hidden roll games on my list, so this is what that, but if you have a group that can handle getting eliminated quick, but love everybody attacking each other, it's fantastic. And of course, you already mentioned the crew. You have to have a trick-taking background, in my opinion, to truly appreciate the crew. You have to have been brought up as a trick-taker. But if you are, the crew is without doubt would be in that top 10. Like another way of saying that is if I'm helping someone get their top 10, like Brad and Kimberly came up playing Euchre, which is trick-taking. I'm like, you should have the crew. We haven't played the crew with them yet. But if you were brought up trick taking, you're going to love the crew. If you're a newer gamer who loves the strategy of other games, then the crew is perfect for that. So those are all my honorable mentions they're very specific for who that person would be. So I'm going to jump it into my number 10. So like, again, each of mine has a different kind of thematic element to it. And I'm going to kick it right off with the number one OG. This won't be too much surprise, but my number 10 is Settlers of Catan. Settlers is a great game as a newer game to start in there. It gets you into the chance of rolling, even though it's by a German designer and people kind of consider it Euro game. There's a little bit of Ameritrash in there because you're rolling dice to get resources. And it's all about the die roll. You're still living and dying by that, but it can be fun and exciting for that. The one thing about Settlers we probably talked about before is that what I've realized, what people love much about Settlers was the trading aspect, right? In Settlers of Catan, if you're not on the edge, there's spots on the edge of the board where you can maybe trade, you know, three of anything for something or two of something for something else, right? But you can always trade with other players. But my family, we never, ever, ever traded. There's no, well, this way, no one traded with Jason. Let me clarify that. The kids would trade with each other. Elizabeth trades them. No one trades with Jason. And there are expansions that make the game even better. Like Cities and Knights is a fantastic expansion. And that, if you brought me Settlers and said, hey, I want to throw Cities and Knights, I would sit down and play it right now, because Cities and Knights has such cool things in there that changes the base game of Settlers up enough. But the base game is great for a newer player, because you learn how to deal with the strategy, the ever-changing board, because every time you play, the board is different, the numbers are different, where those landscapes or where those resource tiles are at are different, the die roll make it different every game, and it's enough of a difference that you have a different game each time you play. I'm going to see how many times I can say different when I describe Settlers, but Settlers of Catan, my number 10. What's your number 10, yeah, Robbie?
So I switched it up a little bit, and my number 10 is about a place called Catan and Settlers rolling into it. No, I mean, when we knew that we had to include it on the list, I would have made so much money if I was placing bets on where we put this. Yes. Once again, it is an iconic game. I want to take nothing away from it. One of the coolest things that I've seen with people who have Settlers and play continuously is sort of in the legacy realm of games, where I do think that when people eventually play my Settlers copy, at this point, it's kind of famously still in the plastic. But when you win, someone gets to sign and name one of the land pieces, like one of the tiles. So that can be one that was really critical for them. That kind of was critical going against them. Like, man, that ore almost made me lose because everybody kept hitting that ore, things like that. So I think that's a really fun aspect to it. I agree with Jason that the bartering of resources is one of the critical pieces, and you can win without it. When you watch like the World Series of Catan, they're not trading. Like they're very rarely exchanging resources and things like that. And so you can win without it for sure, but it makes the game feel a lot more empty without that aspect to it. So if you have a friendly group, you're getting into it, you guys haven't built years and years of board game grudges, Catan probably going to be a win for you. And once again, I would say that it's really tough to say you have a good board game collection if you don't have Catan in it.
Yep.
Even if you never play it, it's like, can you really say you own, like you have a library of books if you don't have an encyclopedia in there? Like you gotta have like some constant through it all. So Catan is that for me. My number 9, I head into the co-op genre, which cooperative games are everyone playing is kind of playing against the board. And those can be some people love them, some people hate them. This is the co-op that I go to more than any other co-op out there, and it is Mysterium. I love Mysterium. And Mysterium, I always describe it as reverse Clue. So in Clue, everyone's trying to move around the board and guess the person, the room, and the murder object. And Mysterium, someone has died, and they are passing along clues to the specters that have arrived. And every single specter has a person, place, and thing that they are trying to guess. But that is amidst multiple other options. So there are maybe, if there's four people playing, there's six rooms out there, and they're trying to guess which room is theirs. And the way they're going to get those clues comes from the Dixit universe, which is another card-based picture game that the art is absolutely stunning. We've talked about it before. Dixit's one of those. I could take half the cards in Dixit and print them out and put them around my house as art. So Mysterium, super fun. I've had games of Mysterium where we played and like, we had a game group going and we played Mysterium. I introduced them to it and we didn't win. And they liked it so much that they were like, we've got to try again because we can win this game. So we brought it back and we played again. So it's really, really fun. Yeah, definitely in the co-op genre, especially as my wife is one of those who vehemently hates co-op games. This was a huge winner for her, long time standing in my collection.
That's great. Mysterium is, I think if I played Mysterium more, it may have made my list. It's a great game. I recommend it often. I even had, well, we know one of our friends, Justin, has just started playing it recently, but I had another friend reach out on Instagram last week and was asking for game recommendations. And Mysterium was one of the ones I gave them and said, it's a little odd. There's lots of how to play videos that are great. So it seems a little odd, but once you play it, it's amazing. Working together, being the person who's given the clues are so fantastic. So Mysterium's a great guess, a great pick for sure. And in those vein, I have my number nine, not a co-op, but is in that same world in that it's Dixit, using the same type cards from there. So Dixit is we talked on previous episodes, but basically Dixit is a competitive game where basically you're giving clues. You each have cards, you're given a clue to have someone guess your card or put out other cards that are similar to yours. You're going to say, okay, Disney. And then everybody finds a card privately in their hand that would make you think of Disney. We all put them out and then we vote on which one we think is the clue giver's card, right? And then the scoring is based on if everybody guessed the clue givers, then everybody gets points, but the clue giver gets nine. But if at least one person, but not everybody guessed the clue givers, then they get 3 points. Pretty cool points-based system. The art is just fantastic. Everyone, this is another one of those games that it's one that every time I've shown it, it's been a hit. It's a little odd at first. Like so many games to non-gamers, like, what am I doing? You can just sing a song or you can whistle or you could just point at whatever that is, right? Your clue can be what you want it to be. You don't want it to be so obscure no one gets it, but so obvious that everyone gets it. And what's tougher is when you have three young adult age kids who have all their own inside jokes and stuff, you're never going to win a game because they're going to have a clue that's something about Five Nights at Freddy's or something that I have no clue about. And they're going to guess each other's and I'm going to fall behind. So that's a heads up for all y'all out there. So, but no, Dixit is fantastic. I love Dixit. It's such an easy game to play. So many expansions because it's just really cool cards. And like Robbie said, the art on Dixit is just amazing. Disney Dixit just came out. We haven't bought it yet, but I've seen the cards and they look awesome for sure. Like, and it can be interplayed. Disney Dixit can be mixed with regular Dixit. There's no unique game rules there. And then like you can actually mix Dixit cards with Mysterium and vice versa because those cards are so unique. So I love Dixit. It's one that doesn't get played a ton. But if I have a game night with newer gamers or a bigger group, because it plays six very easily, we'll play it. When we had our foundation game night last spring, we pulled out Dixit and Elizabeth ran it and it went really well. So it's definitely one to think about. So let's move on to my number eight. We're going to go to my second OG game. And it's not tough because it's a game that I love, but I haven't played in a while. But all three of these OG games, we've played a ton and a ton and a ton. And I've actually gone through three. I'm on my actual third copy of Carcassonne. Number eight is Carcassonne. We played it a ton. The box got worn out. The cards got worn out. And then my friend who got me into gaming, Joey, a few years ago, we were in Germany. And for a Christmas present, he sent me the Carcassonne box that was in the shape of a meeple. Super cool. Mm-hmm. We played that one today. I played the daylights out of it, but when we moved back from Germany, the box got broken. So then I bought another copy recently, but it's still in its shrink. Not because I don't like it, but just because I have so many games. But Carcassonne is, as an OG game, it's a tile-laying game in that there are rules on how you lay the tiles. Grass can only touch grass. A road has to touch road. The city has to touch a city. So you can't have a color, or basically you can't have a territory, a geography not touching something else on that tile. But they're talking about a basic gameplay. You draw a tile and place a tile. You draw a tile and place a tile. And that's it. The strategy comes out was as you put your workers out, they score based on different things, whether it's the road or whether it's you're trying to have a farmer out there or whether you're trying to complete the entire castle or whether you're trying to surround a cloister, which is a single building. I know Nate's been playing that a lot lately and has definitely really enjoyed it. Carcassonne, the app is really great. I don't know if the app is supported anymore, but the app was really fun for sure. But such an easy game. Cascadia, in many ways, is a different game, but it's kind of taken over that for the game I show people. But I could easily pull out Carcassonne just as easy as Cascadia and teach somebody the concept of tile laying games. Carcassonne is that for me. Number eight.
Yeah. Carcassonne, it's so good. And Dixit, I mean, you talk about that inside joke. I honestly, that thought had never crossed my mind. And Justin, who you mentioned playing Mysterium, told me when he played Dixit, he crushed everyone, because what he would do is, like, when he was giving clues, he would look at who was in last place and give an inside joke to just, like,
yep, I can see that,
with, because his two kids and his wife were playing. So very, very fun. I love when people game the game. My number eight is in the deck building genre, and it is Dominion. You may have thought, considering Smash Up is like one of my favorite games of all time, that Smash Up like was going to jump the list. But I have to be honest, as much as I love Smash Up, it's not on my list. So honorable mention, but I mean, we did a whole episode on it. So if you want to know why I love Smash Up, you can listen to a previous episode. Dominion is the deck builder, though, that I was like raised on in board gaming. My friends, I actually didn't own a copy of Dominion for the longest time because my friends had all the expansions of it. And so Dominion, at its base, you get a deck of 10 cards. Five of them have, like, I think it's like points or something like that. And then five of them are coins. It kind of spreads out. So you draw five cards, and then there's a market of other cards out in front of you. And those, that market can be other power-up cards. They can be other coin cards. They can be victory point cards. Because at the end of the game, you never really have a board that you're playing per se. But at the end of the game, you're going to calculate how many victory points you have stacked into your deck. And that's how many, whoever has the most wins. So really, really fun. And a mechanic that I think is really cool about Dominion is that when you stack the cards in the box, you don't play with the same set or the same market every time. Even if you just have the base game, there's like a system that you use to pick which cards are going to make it to the market. And then when you add expansions, there's obviously more cards that get added. So you'll see even more variation game to game. So while there are some games where there's a market and there's a strategy, and it's like, these are tried and true strategies that just work in these games. Like, I'm sure in Clank as a deck builder, there's some strategy of like, you can just kind of sprint, grab a treasure, sprint back, and that's going to create some chaos for other people. Whereas Dominion, you could be like, oh yeah, I really love going for this particular card. But there's a very real chance that when you play it next time, that card's just not even there. So you have to constantly be pivoting. And then once a card runs out, you don't restock it. So just a lot of variance there. I really, really enjoy deck builders in general. I know Jason mentioned in Dune Imperium that, like, sometimes when a game like gets slapped over, or like a theme gets slapped over, like a movie or stuff like that, I think I could play a different deck builder every week, and especially if there was a cool theme slapped on top of it. That's the one thing about Dominion, it is like a medieval theme. And I think the theme doesn't necessarily, other than like silvers and golds being passed around, the theme is just very loosely attached to Dominion. So I would love a deck builder that the theme is even more rich in that. So that's my eight. My seven, keeping the idea of seven, is Seven Wonders, which is a set collection type game. Now, Seven Wonders is a game we talked about, Sushi Go Party, Sushi Go Party Edition, which is this idea of you're passing, you get a hand, you pass it around, you pick one, you pass it on to the next person. So that's a very easy concept for non-gamers to jump into. So it's a great addition to any collection because of the fact that in Seven Wonders, you're just going to get this card and you're going to pass it on. As a great example, we played Seven Wonders in a game night when I was up with Jason, and we ended up having more than seven people, which is another cool part about Seven Wonders, is that it plays up to seven people really beautifully. It even plays down to two. I suggest getting Seven Wonders Duel instead of just playing the two-person variant of regular Seven Wonders. It's a little more confusing. But I had either Eli or Cohen with me, who is, they couldn't have been like, what, 10? And so they're playing this game and they were able to play it just as well. We didn't come in last. we came in second to last, but he could still play the game. And he was like, after the first round, basically, he didn't ask for my advice anymore. He just kind of played the game. So really, really fun. Seven Wonders is iconic. I will go ahead and tell you that if you play Seven Wonders for the first time with a bunch of people who have never played it, it's going to be so confusing because you just don't know the icons. Some things can be really confusing to score, stuff like that. Watch a video on it. Get that experience before you play it. But Seven Wonders is definitely, to me, a classic in set collection.
Oh, for sure. Both great selections. I mean, Seven Wonders is, it's one that I remember the first time some of our friends in Tampa showed us to us. They said, we're going to, once you know how to play this game, I mean, the setup is actually longer than the gameplay because in general, you're going to play 18 cards. You're going to play 6 cards per round, and that's it. That's literally all you do in that game. And it sounds more basic than it is. It is not that basic. It's so dynamic with all the strategy. Definitely good selection. And of course, Dominion, it's round the edge of OG. Like if there's a second tier OG, without doubt, Dominion is right there knocking on door, say, all right, guys, let me in. Great deck builder. It's another one too, that if I played it more, we played the daylights out of that when we first got it, but I probably haven't played Dominion in 4 or 5 years. I don't even have a play of it on BG Stats. I was looking it up and like, yeah, even though I still have it, I haven't played Dominion in at least 3 years, probably more than that. And I really need to get
this
out.
This year.
Yes. When you come up, we'll definitely play because I have to play it this year anyway, right? Dominion is so good. But for my deck building game, which is going to be my number seven game, my deck building game is Clank. Now, full disclosure, Clank is definitely a little, Dominion is, because there's no game board and you're just playing cards, the strategy can be deep, but it's not as much as Clank, whereas Clank has a lot going on. So I fully acknowledge that Clank is maybe a step beyond a brand new gamer, but maybe a newer gamer who is newer to some of those concepts, right? And so I'll say of all the games on my list, except maybe one more, this is the heaviest, not a heavy game, but the heaviest game that's out here because there's some strategy in how you play your cards. The gameplay is easy, but the strategy is, okay, I want to do this to cause this clank or do this to stumble, this to do whatever, right? As you learn your cards. But I love deck building games. When you were talking about you could play a different deck building game every week, I'm in that same boat. I like cards that do things, right? I like getting to get more and more cards to do stuff, to play stuff, to do more and more stuff. Clank is that way in that you have the cards, you start the same way. Everyone starts with the same 10 cards. Your goal is to go down on a game board to move your piece down to get treasures and come back out. And as long as you can get a treasure and come back out before either the dragon kills you or the castle collapses, you have a chance to win the game. You may not win the game, because at the end, whoever has the most points wins. But it's an interesting kind of race to race down into the bellows of the castle on the board to get your stuff and come back out. You're playing cards to move down, to fight the demons, to buy more cards, to fight demons or monsters that come out in the cards. And there's just so many crazy cool cards that let you do fun stuff and break the game. Okay, you normally can't go through here, but this card lets you teleport to the next one. Clank is fantastic. There's a game called Clank in Space. Similar concept, but you're trying to fix the computer system. It has a legacy system as well. A legacy game called Acquisitions Incorporated. We played through that. Elizabeth, me, and a writer did. By a lot of people, it's considered probably the best legacy game out there, if not one of the best. One of the best legacy games out there. Clank is a fantastic game. The concept of play is pretty easy, but a little bit more strategy for sure. That is Clank. I love Clank. Dune Imperium, I like more, but it gets a lot more. It's heavy enough that it's definitely not a newcomer's game or a good one to start a collection with for sure. But it's a good follow on to Clank. So that's my number seven, Clank. My number six is the game I had the hardest time deciding what I wanted to be. The game mechanism of cooperative games, I had a hard time deciding what I was going to go to. Because there's the OG Pandemic, but Pandemic can be a little rough for sure. There's Marvel United. We talked about Marvel United last week. And excuse me.
It's getting all choked up about these co-op.
I know, man. I'm getting very emotional about it. Okay, maybe I'll stop coughing. So it's tough. Marvel United was on there for a while. I took it off. I thought about Castle Panic, another good co-op game, right? There really are so many good co-op games. The one I landed on is actually Forbidden Island. Another one of those, like, it's another one, like, second, third tier OG games. Forbidden Island is plays 1 to 4 people, because one player could just cover a couple of different players, in which you have island tiles. You're trying to get four idols from this island and then fly off the island before the island sinks, essentially. And during the game, you each play a different role. Like, you could be the helicopter pilot. I forgot all the characters' names, but you could be a pilot that can go anywhere. You could be someone that can grab a towel from somewhere else who has their own unique abilities. And you each, on your turn, you can take up to three different actions, and you can do the same action multiple times or three different actions. And you're basically trying to collect cards, four of this idol's card, and I'm on the tile with this idol symbol. I turn the cards in. Now I have that idol, the little token. And once you have all four and you can all get to the same tile, the helicopter pilot will take you off. It's super light, and you can scale it to be easier or harder based on how you start the game. But it has kind of a countdown mechanism that after, when you pull Waters Rise card, you will start flipping tiles, and tiles slowly get eliminated from the game. These tiles you're moving on will get eliminated from the game. So you have to work together to figure out how I want to move from those things. It's great because it's super light. So it's easier for families to play. It's easier for newer gamers to play. It's easier for kids to play because the concept of what you're doing isn't super strategy. Having to work together is a good thing as well. The one danger is you could have someone who, what we call quarterbacking it, right? Someone who tries to tell everybody else what to do. So if there's a player in your life who wants to do that, this may not be the best game, but a lot of co-op games fall into that realm as well. Even Mysterium, because you have, even though they shouldn't be, they could be quarterbacking it. As long as someone's not quarterbacking it, you can really learn the different characters as well and work your way through those things. Forbidden Island is great. It comes in a metal tin. That's super cool as well. It's one that as you progress in gaming, you'll play it out. But it's a great thing to work on how your co-op games go for sure. We keep it mostly as a sentimental thing because I played it so much when my kids were younger and as they progressed through gaming. We had them in heavier games when they were young, but sometimes they needed to just have a fun game as well and learn to work together. Forbidden Island was one of those games, and you definitely can't go wrong with those.
Yeah, Forbidden Island was actually, I had it in the place of Mysterium, and I switched it about an hour before we recorded. So it was between those two because, like Jason said, you can scale it, which is so cool. Like, in terms of, I can play the super easy version and a super hard version. And then also the same vibe carries on to Forbidden Desert, which gets more difficult. Yep. And then, so you kind of reset the scales there if you really like that. So the Forbidden games, just really, really cool. I enjoy them a lot. Great, great pick. My number six is going to come in as one of the big three, and that is Ticket to Ride is actually going to come in as my number six. And I know that's going to feel controversial to some. I know Jason loves TTR, and so the fact that it didn't even crack the top five for me, probably offensive. But, you know, I think that he'll still host with me on the other side, maybe. If I get replaced next week, you'll know why. But Ticket to Ride is a game where you are building train routes across America, Europe, Germany. Like, there are a bunch of different variations of it, but the original Ticket to Ride is across America, and you're building these routes. And so you have a hidden train route that you get at the beginning. You get three routes handed to you, I think, and you can choose to keep all three, but you have to keep at least one.
Yeah.
And so you have like a hidden goal, which is a really cool mechanism to teach inside of board gaming, because you want to make sure that you're not being too obvious and trying to achieve that goal, but you don't have to necessarily do it. If you don't achieve that goal, then you're going to lose points. But you're just playing trains. You're collecting these train cards that are different colors. And then once you've accrued all of those colors to fill out a line in its entirety, you play it. So this is one that just getting the trains passed out and people to organize them in a manner that doesn't look like just absolute pile of trains. And there's two camps of people in Ticket to Ride. There are those whose trains are organized, and there are those whose trains are in piles. There is no in between. Like, you don't just sit there and casually do this. And I'd bet in Jason's family with five people that you've got a good mixture of both, honestly. Just thinking through it, like, I could see Hannah very clearly being like a chaos pile person, but I could also see her not having them in rows, but just like, I'm going to build a fun little pattern this time with my trains while we're sitting over here. I'm going to spell things out and stuff like that. So it's super, super fun. Once again, I use my mother-in-law as a game-averse person. Ticket to Ride she at their house, they own Catan and Ticket to Ride. And Ticket to Ride is one that we can play with them. The nice thing about Ticket to Ride is that if you're playing with inexperienced players or newer players, buckle up and prepare for like an hour play. If you're playing with experienced players, outside of the scoring, you can probably finish a game of Ticket to Ride in like 20 minutes.
Yep.
Because people are just, I'll take this one and this one. I'll take the yellow and the red. I'll take the green and the red. I'll take the red and the red. I'll take the wild. Like, it just moves so fast. So I enjoy Ticket to Ride a lot. It is a classic for a reason. And the expansions add in, not expansions, because they're not really expansions. The other versions add in some powers and different abilities. So if you like the core concept of Ticket to Ride, then there is a great opportunity waiting for you on their side. Very similar to the one that we've already mentioned in Catan, of there are a multitude of powers that exist out there that add it to another world, another level. Now, my number five is probably, I would say it is my favorite genre of games, but that is because I am an extrovert on the extreme side of things. I like when my wife is out of town, I tell people this is an example. When my wife's out of town, I go to the mall and I eat at the food court just so I can be around people. Like, I love social interaction. And so social deduction or hidden role games always resonate with me. Now, there's one, Secret Hitler, that a lot of people love. I will admit, I hate that game. I've never had a good experience playing Secret Hitler. It is my least favorite in the genre. So come at me in the comments if you want. That's fine. But my favorite is One Night Ultimate Werewolf. One Night Ultimate Werewolf coming in at my number five. The beautiful part about One Night is that you can make it very simple, but you can also make it super complicated. And any hidden role game where there's a chance that no one is the bad role always sells with me. So hidden role games, One Night Ultimate Werewolf, think Mafia. If you ever played it at a party where everyone is awake, they close their eyes, Mafia wake up, who do you want to kill? They point to someone, go to sleep. Who's the angel? They wake up. Who do you want to save? Go to sleep. Who's the doctor? Who do you want to like protect? Whatever it may be. There's a bunch of roles that exist. Well, in One Night Ultimate Werewolf, there are a multitude of roles that exist. There is a wonderful app for your phone that narrates the whole process. So then you don't even have to worry about like one person calling it out and remembering all those details. The app, you can change the voice. You can change the background music. It's free. So cool. So you set your roles, you do all that, and everybody goes to sleep and you know what role is sitting in front of you. You have a card sitting in front of you. And then everybody goes to sleep and all this stuff happens in the night. People are swapping cards with one another. They're looking at other people's cards. But when you wake, and then there's three cards in the middle at all times. This is an important part of it. Three cards in the middle. And so you can swap with a card, like some people's role swaps with one of the cards in the middle. So the werewolves are who you're trying to find, but there's a chance that there's two werewolves. They could both be in the middle. And people have no idea. So you got to vote someone off and it's like, eh. But when you wake up, you are not necessarily what you went to sleep as. Right. Whatever card is in front of you, that's what you are now. So if you went to sleep as a werewolf, when you wake up, if someone swapped your card with another person, then you're no longer a werewolf. So if you vote and play the voting round as if you're a werewolf, you're going to lose. So it's like, that's fun. But one of the cards is a troublemaker and it swaps two other players' cards. So if I'm the troublemaker, I can be like, Jason, I swapped two of Elizabeth's cards. If either of you are the werewolves, you got to let me know. And then Jason could be like, yeah, I was the werewolf. Let's kill Elizabeth. Bang. I know she's got the werewolf card. And then as the troublemaker, I come out and I'm like, I didn't swap y'all's cards. I swapped Elizabeth and Ryder's cards. And now we know Jason's the werewolf. Like, there's just so much fun to it. So One Night Ultimate Werewolf, we have played that game so much that my cards are literally peeling and they are like thick cardboard.
Yeah, you cannot go wrong with One Night Ultimate Werewolf for sure. We own that game. We own Werewords, right? The shorter version but slightly different version of that. It is not, for those who've listened to the podcast and you definitely know this, hidden role games just aren't my kind of cup of tea. I'll play them, but I will never. Bang the Dice game is that hidden roll that if I know the crowd will like it, it'll be great. Just like when we played at USDGC, to this day, still one of the best games I've ever had a Bang the Dice game when Brody was convinced Brad that he didn't know what he was doing. Fantastic, right? That's what hidden roll games can do, because you're pretending, right? You get to actually lie to your friends and have fun doing it, right? And So that's what hidden roll games are definitely for that. One Night is an all-time great for a reason. It's not for me. I won't pull it out. And if people want me to play, you got to stretch. You got to twist my arm a little bit. There's a newer one called Night of the Ninja that we'll play sometime. You're up here. I don't know if you played it yet. It's a hidden roll game, but the roles change every round. It's a multi-round game, and so it's pretty quick. And you're playing different versions of ninjas and assassins. And you're still taking care of people, but it's not the close your eyes and do this. It's like, okay, this is who I am. I'm going to try to play this now. But it goes pretty fast because each round you're playing something different. That is not my number five, but One Night is great. It's a great pick for sure. And of course, Ticket to Ride is going to be on mine at some point. But I will say the Robbie is correct in that you either organize your trains or you don't. And one thing Xander does, which we still love, is he will actually, so I think you start with 45 trains. He actually makes numbers with his. So if he has 45 trains, he has his trains in the number of a 45. And then when he's down to 32 trains, he has trains drawn out. So it's a 32. So he knows how many trains he has left. It's fantastic. I still, one of my greatest memories is my kids doing that. And I think the other ones start doing it as well. So you definitely can't not mess with those. So good picks for sure. If there's places. Yes, it hurts my heart. And, you know, I will say a prayer for you tonight for Ticket to Ride only being outside the top five. So we'll see where it lands for me. Definitely going to be in my top five, but it's not my number five. My number five is it's the other game that I talked that's a little heavier. It's definitely the heaviest game on my list, and that's Lords of Waterdeep. Lords of Waterdeep is a worker placement game. If you are from a D&D background but not a tabletop background, this is a good one to play to start off with, because it's thematically not, you're not necessarily thematically playing D&D, but it's characters and names and concepts you will know because it's Waterdeep. Places on the board are places you know in the D&D 5e universe, right? At its heart, in Lords of Waterdeep, depending on how many players are in the game, you start with either two or three workers, and then you're putting that worker out, and you're essentially getting cubes, which are resources to turn in to complete quests. Those quests could just be straight up points, or they could be additional abilities and points or coins. You're using workers to put out buildings, which give you more points and give you more worker placement spots on the board. And you also have entry cards that let you just do stuff. It can be, hey, I'm going to steal something from you. Hey, I'm going to give everybody this. Hey, I'm going to do this really cool move. That's what entry cards are. I'm oversimplifying the game, but that's basically the gist of it is you're putting a worker out to get resources, eventually turn those resources in to complete quests. Quests are one of the main ways in which you're getting points and moving around the board. That's the reason why, because it's not, the gameplay is not super deep, because you'll always have a worker placement spot to go. The way the game is, there'll always be some place to go. Now, that place maybe go just to get a single white cube as opposed to the one that's two black and an orange, but you'll always be able to do something. Towards the very, very end of the game, there may be less ideal spots, but early in the game, they're like, okay, well, I really wanted that four coin spot, but this one's going to give me two orange. I'll go there knowing I need orange later on. So that's one of the good things about Lords of Waterdeep for sure. It's one that we showed Brad and Kimberly, and they're loving it, right? And Brad and Kimberly are definitely newer players. They've played enough to not be brand new players anymore, but they're still, within the last year, new to the board game life, and they're loving Lords of Waterdeep right now. It has a great expansion that just gives you more stuff to do. It has two expansions, one in which you can go down a bad path and start doing bad things and get negative points. We never do that one. Not like necessarily bad things, but it's the Skulls of Skullport. Either way, it doesn't matter. But there's another board that just has you more places to do stuff. Can't go wrong with Lords of Waterdeep. Another one that has a fantastic app. I've played that app a ton of times as well. We showed you this, right, Robbie, on one of your trips up. We played Lords of Waterdeep.
I've not played Lords of Waterdeep yet.
It's Kimberly and Brad then. Okay, yeah, that is on top of that may be the top of the list. It'll be hard to think of another one that's going to be higher than Lords of Waterdeep to play on one of your next trips for sure. But it is a great worker placement game. It's a little pricier. It's usually in the $40 to $50 range, but there's so much gameplay in it. It plays at five players as well. It's an eight-round game, but because there's so few, it doesn't get prone too much to analysis paralysis, even with the really slow players, because as the board, as those worker placement spots get filled up, there's less you can go to. So it's easier to take those actions. Super fun. And of course, Elizabeth always attacks me and never anybody else. When we played with, when we played with Kimberly and Brad, Kimberly kept trying to be nice and help me out. Kimberly ended up winning the game. But because she saw Elizabeth relentlessly attacking me with all the little things. Attack is relative. Like there's cards where you can steal from somebody. She'd always steal from me. Or you could give to somebody. Elizabeth would always give it to Brad or something like that. So Kimberly tried to throw me a bone. And I appreciate that. But that's my number five, Lords of Waterdeep. My number four, if I was cool like Robbie, I would have done the way he did it. But my number four game is Seven Wonders. So our first true crossover of exact games that weren't part of the OG. On both of our lists. Robbie already said everything. Seven Wonders is such a great game. We talked about Sushi Go Party. Sushi Go Party is definitely that good entry-level game, but if you want that next level of strategy, that next level of play, it's definitely Seven Wonders. I said it, but when, on his time, it's once you know the game, it truly takes longer to set it up and tear it down than it does to play the actual game. And that's just the base game. I've seen plenty of reviewers talk about how many awesome expansions there are. We just got the Leaders expansion for Black Friday, so super cheap, and I still haven't played with it yet. But I love Seven Wonders because you could just play it. Okay, shuffle, shuffle, play again. I mean, you could get it fast. Players who know what they're doing could play, you know, three times in a little over an hour, other than just take the time to shuffle the cards and get them back set up. It's so good. You can go down the path where you're fighting your neighbors with soldiers, or you can totally ignore the soldier track and go down the scientific track or whatever track you want to go on. Every game can be different. My wife will always go down the blue card, wherever the blue cards are. She always goes heavy on blue cards and tends to win a lot. So maybe that's not a bad strategy. But Seven Wonders, my number four game, definitely can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I do think that the trap of anyone who plays Seven Wonders for the first time is that they put too much investment in the soldiers.
I agree.
Like it is, and you watch it every time. Like when I watched people play Seven Wonders that round that I was talking about, you had Nathan had played it before, his wife Amy had played before, and then obviously you and Elizabeth had played before, so the four of them are just like, it's so peaceful on that side of the board. Mm-hmm. Like none of them have any red basically whatsoever, and then you go over to the Joneses and they all have like nine different swords waiting, and it's like, whoa, guys, what are we doing here? It's crazy how that game plays out. But Seven Wonders is wonderful, and I cannot wait to play Lords of Waterdeep. As a D&D guy myself, super stoked for it. My number four comes in as the final of the big three for me, and that is Carcassonne. Carcassonne is just, in terms of tile placement, it is one that I love so much. They sell a Carcassonne big box that has a bunch of expansions for it as well. And so you get other meeples. When we say meeple, for those of you not familiar, like it's like the little wooden looking people. And a meeple doesn't have to necessarily be human shaped. They can just be like, I don't think by it, they have to be humanoid in nature to be classified as a meeple. But you have these little meeples, that's the little shape, and so you're placing them around, and there's just a host of options. I love Carcassonne, that there is deep strategy even in the base game of the farmers, but I also love, like Jason's house rule of when they're teaching Carcassonne, they don't even put farmers in for the first time that you play. My brother introduced me to Carcassonne. Some of my favorite board gaming memories are playing with my older brother, John. I was talking about this list with friends at trivia last night, and I mentioned Carcassonne, and Lindsay was like, I think I've only played Carcassonne like once. So it's funny that it's this high up on my list, but we've rarely played it. But my two of my best friends, Lincoln and Tyler, looked at me and they were like, oh, Carcassonne. Lincolnshire, Lincolnville, because we built like a 50 point city one time, and Lincoln was just hardcore set on, this is my city. Anyone's welcome to come in, but you cannot overtake this city.
Yeah.
So it like all anyone who participated in Lincolnville, we did not win because we just split the points, but man, did we pull off something epic. And so there's just, I love a game that you remember afterwards. So Carcassonne, one of the final of the big three for me. Really love it. And then my number three is one that I'd be willing to bet is going to be our second crossover, and it's Just One. So Just One is a party game, and this is, you may think with One Night Ultimate Werewolf, that's a party game. I would consider, while One Night Ultimate Werewolf plays best at parties, party games are much more light in their strategic nature. Party games, there are party games that have a competitive element to it. Lots of party games don't have a competitive element to them. You're just kind of like enjoying the time. So Just One, very basic concept. Someone has a card that has five random words on it. Those can be like anything from like pyramid all the way to dishwasher. Like that's the scope that we're dealing with here, people. So I'm going to hold that card up in front of my head and I'm going to pick a number 1 through 5. That's going to connect to a word. And then everyone else playing the game gets to write down just one word on their little easel. And then they're all going to show it to each other before I get to see it as the clue guesser. And if there's any duplicates, I don't get to see those. So you're trying to, and then once everything's been settled, I, as the clue guesser, I'm going to look at all the words in front of me and try to guess what word they're pointing me to. It's definitely one of those games that if you play it, I always pass off the caveat that don't judge the person giving the clue, because to you, writing down you're just one and you're looking at everyone else's, you're like, oh, it's so obvious. Of course, that's going to get us there. Yeah. And then, of course, when the person flips and they look, they're like, I have no idea what word this is supposed to get me to. So there's always more pressure when you're the one guessing. But Just One is another one. Lots of games on this list have gone well when I play them with people. Just One is something that, like, I host a live event every year for my Patreon community over in disc golf. And Just One is a hit every single year. Like, we're going to do it again this year, and I know that board game night people are going to play Just One.
Oh, for sure. And I'll have to say, great minds think alike, because my number three is Just One. How great is that? Fantastic. I love it. Robbie already said so many good things about it. It's funny, when you were talking about it, it made me think of the very first time I came to your first Birdie Fam 2 years ago. Like, no one was really playing, so I was like, oh, let's get out Just One and start playing it. And people were like, oh, I don't want to play. And then usually, like, within they see somebody play one hand of it, they're like, okay, I'll play. Because they're intimidated. So many people are intimidated by the concept of a board game. Well, this is definitely a party game. There's a scoring mechanism to it. Ignore that scoring mechanism altogether. You can do it if you want to. We never do scoring. We play it just for fun. You can play as long as you want. You can play as little as you want. You can literally drop in for one hand and jump out. It doesn't matter. And that's what's so great. You could play it, but you could just stand off to the side and make a guess if you want to. That's what's so great about Just One. It's I said this about a few games, but I've never, in specifically two Birdie Fam events, I've run Just One, and you just see people who would never be gamers. They have no desire to play a game. And in 5 minutes, they're sitting down playing this game with you because it's just fun. And it is a tabletop game, and you're just having fun with each other. And it brings out great stories. Like, we have, I think I told you this before, but there's one of the words is plier, P-L-I-E-R, but that's also plier or plie. And so we, like, that's a joke among the Jordans and us, is like, is it plie or plier? Like, because we all saw plier, but then Christopher saw plie, and it was just funny. And then we had one clue 1 year was about doing drug testing for, I think it was marijuana. I can't remember what, I think it was drug. And like, and somehow it got equated to drug testing for the Olympics or something like that. So that's our joke. Like, oh, because they're drug testing for the Olympics, right? I'm like, what? Yeah, like, yeah, it had nothing to do with it. It was, it's so great. That's another game. So talking about my friend who reached out last week, I was like, you got to go with Just One. Don't worry about the scoring. If you just want to sit around and have fun, it's one that even my Xander's not a big gamer anymore, but those kind of games, Xander will sit down and have fun with Just One. Because it is easy. It's fun. It's quick. Of course, you can imagine the foundation guys love Just One. When I showed it to them, they loved it. We played it at the Christmas party. Such a good time. You can't go wrong. It's like, I think full price is maybe 15 or 20 bucks. You can usually find on sale for like 15 bucks. It's so great. It only comes with, I think it plays at 6 within the game, but you could put 2 together and play with 12. That is what Brody talked about when he saw it, because Brody played it. He said, we should do guys versus girls. So maybe if you get hardcore and have enough people, you could split off into 2 teams with 2 games. But play it for the fun of it. Sit down for 5 minutes, get up and go, whatever you want to do. But you're right. Just One is such a good game for sure. So that is our perfect crossover for number three. All right. So my number two, I'll only have two left, and I haven't talked about one of my OG games. So here it is right here. Ticket to Ride is my number two game for sure. I love Ticket to Ride. It is funny when I think back, I'm like, when I was making this list, I was like, it had to be number two. It had to be in top three for sure. I'm like, do I really like it that much? I'm like, yeah, I truly do like Ticket to Ride. And full disclosure, I'm kind of combining the three Ticket to Rides that I own together into one. If it was just proper Ticket to Ride, it definitely would be high, but maybe not number two. Ticket to Ride Europe is a very similar game, but adds in some ferries. And then Ticket to Ride Maryland, you can't even buy anymore, but it's a really cool game. Of my two games, it's my game that's worth the most, like at different times on the black market, on the eBay market. That game's worth way much more than I paid for it, and I will never sell it unless I need the money. But Ticket to Ride for a newer player, it's so easy to play. It's basically, I heard Tom Vassell basically call it rummy because you're doing set collection. You're like, okay, I need to get three of this or two of that or five of that. Instead of doing runs, you're basically playing rummy to put out your trains. You can go hardcore and go with the long runs of trains. Put out six at a time for those 15 points, or put out a bunch of ones to get your long route and get the longest route. Whatever that may be, it's so easy. The concept of it is I need three blues to put a train here, right? You may not get your strategy right. You may not get the route right, but hey, I'm trying to get three trains to do this. That was one of the first games. Ticket to Ride is probably the earliest heavier game we taught our kids when they were 4 and 5 and 5 and 6, but they always played tickets up. So like there are train cars up. They had all their train cars out so we could see each other's cards because they weren't really playing each other. They were just playing the board. But I remember all my kids having all their trains out and stacked in the colors and playing Ticket to Ride because that's how they learned how to play, was doing that thing with me and Elizabeth. So such a good game. You can't go wrong with Ticket to Ride. Any version of that, there's some of the smaller versions or more Ticket to Ride Express versions like New York and Berlin teach you the basics of it as well. Those aren't wrong. You can't go wrong with those either. But if you want that little bit heavier game, the OG Ticket to Ride for sure is very nice.
Yeah, because they even have a Ticket to Ride Junior.
I think so. I've never played it, but I've seen it. So
because I know they have a Catan Junior as well, and I've not played either of them. So if you have young ones trying to play, great options there. My number two is undoubtedly the heaviest game on my list, but it is one that I get introduced to at Jason's house, and it just it is my most played game of 2023, and it's not even close, okay. And it's Wingspan. Yeah. And so Wingspan is, if you have any background in trading card games, Wingspan is phenomenal. This was another reason that I felt okay not having Smash Up in here. So when I played all these games with people, Wingspan is one that you could go hardcore on Wingspan and not play any other games and get so good at this that people are at a strategic disadvantage when they play against you. I was trying to send a scorecard because there are certain games that, like, when I play, basically whenever Jason and I play a game, we're pretty much texting each other about it at this point.
Yep.
But when there are certain games played, we'll bring Brad into the discussion as well. And Wingspan, I know that they keep it on their table. The Jones do. It's super, super great. And this was playing it. I had a round that I was like, I literally had to pivot halfway through the game because I was trying to get one thing going and I couldn't get another one. And I was like, junk. Okay. And I still ended up winning by like 20 something points in this game. So, but that's because I knew what to look for. So Wingspan, the concept, once again, we talked about it a lot on this podcast, so I'm not going to spend a ton of time, but you're attracting birds to your habitats. And as those birds come in, they have different powers and things like that. It is extremely overwhelming the first turn or two where you're going through. I feel like any time that you play Wingspan with people, you're going to hear them say in the first or the second round, I did not set myself up for success, especially if you're playing against someone who has played Wingspan a lot because it's an engine builder. So you get a fixed amount of actions and then that action becomes more powerful based on how many birds you attract into that habitat. So like I set my hand up and everyone kept, you get five birds to start. And so I played it with two people who had played it once before and then two freshies. And my first turn, I kept two birds out of my hand, three resources. They all kept like three or four birds. And I tried to warn them. Yep. You probably don't want to do that. But like, if maybe if you have really good birds, that would be worth it. And by the end of the first round, it was already like, oh, Robbie definitely knows what he's doing here. And we're just kind of plucking around trying to get these birds going. And that's even – that was before I even had to pivot. So it's definitely a game, very deep strategy to it, but it's super beautiful. There are multiple expansions that add a lot to the game, a bunch of different bird cards. If you're into 3D printing, the 3D printing market, Four Wings, 3D printing in board games already, massive. But like, I just went down even this weekend down the road of like 3D printing inside of Wingspan, and it is crazy. Mm-hmm. Y'all, how many things people have printed for that? So that's Wingspan. It's my number two. It is easily not only in my top 10 of board games for starting a collection, because it's the, it, like I said, it's the heaviest on my list, but it is top five for me all time by far. The app also really good to learn. The app is only $10 if you want to test it out to decide if you want to move into the $40, because it's a pricier game, but it comes with a lot of components that are really good. Besides the bags, that is one thing I realized when I opened it. The bags are really cheap that like initially come with it. Yep. Almost all of my bags tore. Yep. Anyways, the final, my number one, and I'm curious because we did say that we were only going to use one from a previous episode. So I'm curious if we landed on the same one here. But my number one is Quacks. And so Quacks, we talked about at the beginning. I truly, even when people play so bad, and it's one of those games that it's hard to play bad in Quacks because you're drawing things out at random. So if you love dice rolling and you love pushing your luck, there is a thrill to every single round here. And you can statistically do all the right things, but like no one can come out and be like, oh, I'm an incredible Quacks player, unless you're a dirty, rotten cheater. Like that's the only way that you're just elite at Quacks, because luck eventually is going to balance itself out. Odds are going to balance themselves out. So Quacks is one of those games. It's got everything. It's got push your luck. It has funny player interaction. One of the black powers that we use, Jason, was when you buy a black, you move your teardrop up and you take that black and you put it in the player to your left's back. And then every black they draw, you get a ruby.
Interesting. Love it.
So we played one round and I was busting all the time, but I kept moving because every round I would just buy another black and put it in Dakota's bag. Yeah. And in one round, he pulled six blacks out of his bag. And I got six rubies and I was like, this is amazing. Yep. I'm busting every time, but this is incredible.
Yep.
So Quacks of Quedlinburg, it's our first double-double doozy, and it's definitely the top of my list.
Yep, and you will not be surprised, again, since I haven't even talked about it yet, a double-double doozy. We love this game. We talk about it probably more than the other game on Bar to the Board, but my number one is Quacks of Quedlinburg as well, because you can't go wrong. This is the third time now we're going to talk about this episode, and you can't talk about it enough, to be honest. It's one, I say this a lot too, but it's the game, and I was talking to Elizabeth about this earlier, of all the games we hear the most positive feedback about games that we've recommended that people have bought, it's Quacks. People come back and say, oh, I bought Quacks, loved Quacks, love Quacks, love Quacks. Brad, when he was over, I think last weekend or the New Year's weekend, he went home to visit family and they played Quacks. And I think he had said his sister-in-law, by the time the game was over, had already ordered Quacks and had already ordered the upgraded pieces as well, right? The same reason, hey, if you're going to buy it, maybe buy the big box and you may want to buy the upgraded pieces because they're just so awesome. I love Quacks. It's in my top 10 for sure all time. It's like you put the nail on the head. Like you could say you're playing strategically. You're not. You can even say you're buying chips strategically. There's a little bit of strategy, but if you pull all whites, if you pull all cherry bombs, you're not going to do very well. if you don't pull whites, you're going to do pretty stinking well, right? I've had games where, no kidding, like your life of doing that so many rounds, I've had games where in the last round I was in the lead and I'm like, oh wow, there's five whites in a row, I'm done. And everybody's just going and going and going. And, you know, we do the random reveal and I'm like, well, I'm done pulling chips, because that's just the way it goes. But that's the fun of Quacks for sure. I cannot emphasize it enough for sure. It's the same way, like learning how to place your chips is quote unquote the most confusing thing or hard thing. And we'll try to remind folks, okay, this one, because you put the red out, now every other white goes plus one or whatever it may be. Just reminding people to your right or left. But it's what's funny is that when you tell me about that black chip that you passed to your left, I'm like, I really need to go play Quack some more, because I teach it more than I play it. I mean, I still play it when I teach it, but when I teach it, I'll teach it some of the easier ones, right? So I haven't played enough to go start messing around with all the deeper strategy ones, because we played so, I've owned too many games. Let's be clear, I own way too many games. But trying out some of those other powers the chips give, I really need to do just for the fun of it, because that one sounds fantastic. Because I'm helping my neighbor out, but every time they pull that chip, they're helping me out as well. Like, I'm okay having one less chip in the bag. That doesn't bother me as much if I know it's going to give me a longer, long-term power. So Quacks of Quedlinburg, number one, an easy number one, double doozy, double number one. It's fantastic. And it's a perfect game to start a collection. What I talked about, even if you buy the base game, it's probably going to be close to $40, but it's, we try not to recommend too many heavier, costly games. Wingspan's easy one to do for that. For me, Lords of Waterdeep's an easy one to do that for that next level of complexity. Quacks is there as well.
Yeah, I think too, is it Everdell was the one that we played where you had the Dice Tower cards were in there?
Yep.
Everdell and Dinosaur Island,
yep,
both had Dice Tower cards. I think to myself at this point, like if we were to make like a Bard's card, there are those witches that you flip over. That's what we should do, is you and I should talk about like, you get this or this.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do. We'll plan one out and you can print it out. I'll put an image out. We'll put it out on the, we'll put it out, and then you can just take one of your witch cards that you think is trash and whatever power you don't like and tape it over, and we'll be a Bard's card
for sure
in your Quacks.
Love it for sure.
Because we're not big enough to get custom printing just yet, but, that would be so fun.
Yeah.
So, y'all, it's our longest episode yet, coming in almost an hour and a half. But if you enjoyed this, let us know in the comments. I had a blast with this, Jason. I don't know about you.
Oh, I did.
Prepping was fun.
I did for sure too. And we tried to keep it short. I'm sure we went longer than we should have a few times. But top 10 lists for those newer to gaming. Top 10 lists, right, wrong, or indifferent, are an integral part of gaming. You go to any content creator out there, their lists do the best, because we just like, as board game enthusiasts, we like hearing people talk about games. The Dice Tower this week is doing their top 100 of all time. They do two live streams each day. So Monday they did their, you know, 100 through 91 and then 90 through 81. And so I'm excited because I'll have all that queued up next week when I'm at home working out on the treadmill to go watch through and listen to those things. Cause I that's my favorite thing to listen to, is just hear folks who love board games like yourself and I talk about those board games with passion, because top 10 lists, it's all positive, right? You're not, unless you're being funny, yeah, to be critical, you're positive. You're saying why you like those games. We are all about talking about games we like and that we think you would like as well, and we think that could work well for you. We're trying to describe it in a way that makes sense for what that game is. And that's why I like those top 10 lists. I love doing our top 10 lists. We have a ton of others over the long-term plan to do. They all swirl in my mind for sure. So I had a blast for it for sure. And like Robbie said, let us know if there's any games we missed that you think would be a good one. We've had some good comments for sure. Like on our last game, we talked about Machu Koro. Somebody recommended Space Base. I was like, absolutely. And what's funny, their comment is like, if you haven't played Space Base, play that. I don't know if you saw it. And he goes, oh, I'm an idiot. It's literally behind your head.
Because
I had Space Base right there. But you're right. I mean, Machu Koro is that entry level game to get you to it. Space Base to the next level. And then Bad Company is an even heavier level because you have a board that you're moving on to. But it's the same concept in that you're rolling die and you can get resources based on everybody's role. Love that kind of discussion in there for sure. It definitely makes us excited to hear that our discussions help generate discussion for you. And we love having those conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, like, our, once again, easily, I think if we could have expanded our lists to include the ones we've already had in the episode, then I think you would see them pop up. I wouldn't be shocked if some of the games that we just mentioned here are going to end up on episode reviews in the next 10 episodes. And there's going to be, we've talked about like a racing game, a car drafting game, things like that. And we've tried to, as we've built the episodes, tried to cover as many integral mechanics to board gaming as possible. And we're not done with that list yet. So we're still pushing to finish the list, but eventually you come back around and you're like, all right, cool. We want to talk about card drafting, but we've already covered Sushi Go Party. Probably Seven Wonders, going to make a list. Like it's going to end up as its own episode kind of a deal. So that's where we just want to dive in. Even games that like, yeah, there are genres that Jason really enjoys that aren't for me. And there's genres that I really enjoy, like a secret, a hidden identity game, Hidden Role. That's going to be an episode, things like that. So we appreciate your comments. We appreciate your feedback. Once again, the best way that you can help us continue to grow this audience, can grow this reach, because we have, at this point, we've got thousands of listens, which is so cool that you guys are just listening to two random dudes talk about board games. But at 50 reviews on Apple, 50 reviews on Spotify, and the cool part is, guys, we won't know if you do them both. So you can just get us to that real fast. So we want to say thank you so much. Jason, thanks for taking part of your vacation out to record this podcast. I think the top 10 would have been way more boring if it was just me.
For sure. And I love talking about board games. It's easy to do it. Today was going to be our short day anyway because of Animal Kingdom Day. So it worked out perfectly. And I was excited to do it for sure.
Come on. Well, also, if there's any special guest that you can think of, we've got someone in mind for a future episode. But we definitely want to bring more guests on to have discussions and things like that. So if you've got feedback, anything like that, let us know. Be stoked to have it. So hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we will see you guys next episode.
2 weeks. See ya.